We used to be able to put them in large pans, and now we have a catering team that will even deliver it to your home. We can drop it off for you, set it up, or they can come in and pick it up. Look up our catering menu on www.demusrestaurants.com. This is Peter Demus at Demus's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Our guest this morning in studio is Gage Myers. He is the Chief Operating Officer for Brooks Healing Center. So I guess first tell us about Brooks Healing Center and where you're located and what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me out. Brooks Healing Center is a substance and mental health abuse facility in Normandy, Tennessee. We offer detox level of care as long as residential level of care. Our clients are with us anywhere between 30 to 45 days. We get them set up for aftercare, and we work with many different partners to do that as well.
So what is the biggest problem here in Middle Tennessee that you see on a regular basis?
The biggest problem I would see, just first off, is awareness, right? The first problem is awareness is starting to build up. People are starting to become aware of the opioid epidemic, alcohol epidemic, just overall substances. But now what we're starting to see is people don't really know what to do when they are aware of that issue. They don't know where to turn. They don't know where to go. They don't know how to help. And that's why individuals like us and many others throughout Tennessee are trying to help.
So somebody, let's say they're addicted to pain pills and they've had this problem for however many years or months or whatever the case may be, but it's gotten out of hand and they really do need that help. Who is the first person they should say, hey, you know, I do need some help?
The first thing I would recommend, the same as anybody, just tell somebody. Just tell somebody, because the first thing that we always think about is that the opposite of addiction is sobriety, right? The opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. We just need to know that somebody cares and that somebody is there to love us. And so just tell somebody. You don't have to have all of the right answers. Maybe the person that you tell has better answers to help you. Just tell somebody. Don't do it alone.
And what are you seeing as far as, okay, the person's on pain pills, they can't get those as easily anymore, then they switch to fill in the blank? I mean, what is it they will switch to?
So most of the time in the instance that you bring up, nowadays it's fentanyl. They think that, and fentanyl now too, it's in pressed pills. So they might think that they're just out of what they normally get. They go get a pill that looks just like it, and except it's something totally different. We are seeing a huge number of overdoses take place because of that exact thing.
So are fake OxyContin pills being made with fentanyl right now, and are those readily available?
Absolutely. Not only are they readily available, they are cheaper than the prescription pills.
And I know we've talked to the TBI before about how these pills are being made not in a real drug laboratory, but instead in somebody's back garage or who knows where. But the correct amounts of fentanyl are not in that drug. And once you get the wrong pill with the wrong amount, you just die?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can. Yeah. You can, absolutely. Because, again, fentanyl is such a strong drug. It's not measured out in milligrams like you would your normal everyday prescription pills. You know, you just put some in, and then you hope for the best. And some people who use that regularly, they might have a tolerance to it. But, you know, if somebody's taking, you know, prescription pills every single day, and then they go take that, the tolerance level is way different. You're talking about pinches compared to milligrams.
And do we know where these drugs are being made?
I would really hate to say specifically. We know that it's not here. It's not in America. How and from where, I couldn't tell you.
And how is that, when somebody's addicted to, you know, drugs like that, how hard is it to get off? How long does it typically take, and then what occurs afterwards?
Yeah, so it is hard. Not only is it physically hard, but it's mentally hard too, right? Most addicts, they continue to use not because you get high, not because it feels good, but they're just trying to get well. they still have daily things to go through. So they're just using as a means to get through the day. So now you have to take your whole mental swap and you have to say, okay, I'm not going to do this thing anymore and I have to get help. Most people that come to us and anywhere else, you can fully expect the detox to be anywhere from 5 to 8 days.
And is that detox hard to go through? And what are the hardest days? Day one, day two? What are we looking at?
Yeah, day one, day two. So there's a brief period of abstinence, right? Because the detoxification pills or medication, there has to be an abstinence period. Otherwise, it can make the symptoms much harder. So day one, day two, day three. And also, again, it's hard physically. There's no denying it. It was miserable when I went through it. It's miserable when everybody else goes through it. But it's that mental battle. Because, you know, if I leave what I'm doing and I just go back to that, I can quit hurting right now. Right now, I can stop.
So tell us your story. What got you involved in helping others in this manner?
Yeah, so because I went through it myself. I've been clean since July 2nd of 2021. And my story started just like many others, right? Having fun in college, being young. It wasn't bad until it was bad. I had a few traumatic events happen in my life, and all of a sudden that fun thing now was a necessity. And that continued to go on for right at 8 years. And, you know, what we talk about a lot is hitting rock bottom. And my rock bottom was finally the cat was out of the bag, which I come to find out the cat was already out of the bag. It just wasn't out to me, right? And so I got in my last bit of legal trouble, and everybody knew. And that was embarrassing and hard and painful, because an individual that I grew up playing sports with was actually the one to arrest me. And so that was humbling. And thank goodness, you know, I had individuals in my life that loved me. They reached out to help me, even though I didn't know how to help myself. And I got a call from a family friend that said, hey, I want to help you. And I said, that's wonderful. One problem. I have no money. I have no insurance. How am I supposed to get help? Well, she calls me back. She says, I found you a sponsor to pay for your way. And I thought, well, that sounds like a load of BS, quite frankly. But I had no other options. I had to go. And so I'm so glad that I did, because I, in fact, did not have a sponsor. I had a loving family member who had taken their life savings to pay for me to go and to try to change my life. But they knew, if I knew that it was them, that I wouldn't go. And so I had to do just like everyone else. I had to go through detox. I went through treatment. I went through sober living after. I stayed within the anonymous rooms here locally in Murfreesboro. And you just keep doing it one day at a time.
So traumatic events, is that what usually sparks that, I guess, need to be numb? Is that what usually sparks that addiction?
Most of the time. I'm not going to say all the time, but actually my clinical director, she has a saying that not every individual who has trauma is an addict, but every addict has trauma.
And I guess that trauma, it could have been 10 years prior. You're just now coming to grips with it, and that's when it starts. Or it could be, you know, hey, last week it occurred, and now I need some help.
Absolutely. It could be traumas of all different types. You know, you could get into the big T trauma, which is really big events, one that really sticks with you. It could be little T trauma, which is just small little increments over time that leaves an impact on you. It could be childhood trauma. It could be adult trauma. Whatever it is, there's something that's leaving a void that says, this hurts, I am not enough, and I need something to fill that.
And then what was your go-to for drugs? Was it drugs? Was it alcohol? What was it?
Absolutely, it was drugs. And for the longest amount of time, it was pain pills. And then the same story as many others. I could not afford the pain pills. Somebody came up and said, I can get you this. It's cheaper. It'll get you through. I said no many of times, but I finally said yes because I needed it. I did not want to be sick. And I never went back to pain pills. And that started a whole downward trajectory, because I had used pain pills for 7 years. But that last year of my usage, it was purely the fentanyl. And that 1 year amounted to much more much more trauma and much more usage and much more consequences than the previous seven ever could.
And then when it started with pain pills, how much were you using in a day, you know, before you made that switch, I guess, to what, fentanyl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a lot. It was a lot. I mean, it could be up into the hundreds. Absolutely.
Is that a, you know, 100 pills within a week or
100 yeah. milligrams?
100 yeah. milligrams. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was a daily thing. It all kind of depended on the money that I had. I would take whatever I could just as a means to not be sick. But on those rare events that I had more money, my tolerance was quite high. Yes.
And that's 100 milligrams. That's higher than what you would give a cancer patient who's dying.
It could be. Yes.
That's a lot. So would you take, you know, 50 milligrams at a time, 100 milligrams at a time?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely upwards.
And there's a lot of people out there who are going through the same thing.
They are. They absolutely are. And like I said, it's been some years since I have been out there, but I can only imagine that prices have only skyrocketed in the pain pill industry, and then fentanyl has only gotten cheaper.
When you hear about people who made a switch not to fentanyl but to heroin, is that, when you hear that, is that, you know, do you think that's a intense jump to go from?
So it's actually the opposite. So people who are on heroin now will go to fentanyl.
So if you're, those who are addicted to heroin, if they're trying to make a switch of some kind, it's to pills that are fentanyl pills.
Yeah, well, and it comes just in the same way. So for instance, for me, I was told that I was doing heroin, but it was actually fentanyl because it wasn't in pill form. It was the exact same. And at that time, fentanyl wasn't the most popular where I was. So it was kind of this hush-hush thing of you just say that you're doing one, but you're really doing the other.
So were these made into, you know, the fentanyl you took, was it made into like a pill?
It could be, absolutely. Mine was not, but the ones that I had gotten before was, yes.
Do you know the percentage of those who are addicted in Middle Tennessee, or a rough figure, or the rough number of overdoses in our area?
I don't. I know that there is a website that you can go to and you can look at it. They keep up with it on a daily basis. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know that it's high.
What more could be done to help people get off of these drugs?
Well, you know, the first thing I always say is just trying to understand why it is that us addicts do what we do. Nobody's using drugs because they are just enjoying their life, right? They're hurt. You know, the literature that I study, it says, you know, it's not bad people trying to get good, it's sick people trying to get better. And when you understand what addiction really is and why it is that people use, you can kind of emphasize, you can kind of have a little more compassion, right? You know, because where I'm from, that awareness was not right there, even from my own family, right? Thank goodness I had the one family member who was willing to help. But, you know, my own father, you know, he was just like, why can you not stop? Why can't you just stop? Just go back in the back bedroom, lay down for a couple of days, and be on your way. And it was more than that. I had to figure out why I wanted to use in the first place. What traumatic events led me to feel inadequate? What led me to feel not loved? What led me to feel not enough? And so that's the first thing, is just trying to understand why and then seeing what you can do to help. And sometimes that's just a listening ear.
Were you able to kind of zone in and tie down what it was that led you to actually start?
I was, yes. My therapist, as soon as we got in, we jumped right into it. We found out that it was some, as I talked about before, some small T and some big T, childhood events, adulthood events. And it basically came down to not feeling like I was enough. It came down to not feeling as if I was enough, that I was not good enough. I did not love myself. I was not happy with myself.
So what do you do to turn that around and to fix that feeling?
Well, it's tough. The first thing you have to do is, as I did, there's that layer of separation. If I would have tried to do this on my own, in my own home, I would not have been able to do it. I had to be in a safe environment around other like-minded individuals who were on the same goal as me, and work with professionals who had done this before. So that would be the first thing.
So these are like group counseling sessions where you're sitting with 5, 6, 7 other people?
Yeah, absolutely. Our facility holds 38 beds, and we have group sessions, which can be led by a numerous of people. All of our therapists, they're wonderful. They are highly licensed, master degree credentialing, and we do groups on a huge variety of things. And then they also have their individual sessions, where that's where you get into the real, you know, the real meat of it.
Where is Brooks Healing Center?
It is in Normandy, Tennessee. It is exactly between Shelbyville, Tullahoma, and Manchester, right in the center.
And when, like, let's say somebody calls you and they say, hey, I do want this help, I do want to move forward with this, what is your first step? Is it to check their medical insurance, or is it to say, hey, come on in, let's interview you, see if you're going to be a good fit for our facility?
Yeah, so that's a part of it, right? But the first thing is, sometimes the people that we get, we're the first person they tell. And so I just want to let them know whenever, you know, if it's me, if it's my business development team, it's my admissions team, you know, we just want to talk to them. We just want to see what's going on. How are you right now? Are you in a safe environment? Because some people, they will call us and they're not in a safe environment. We know we need to put a rush on things. We know that we need to go immediately. We will go pick you up. We will bring you to us. Checking their insurance verification, of course, that does happen, and things like that. But the first thing we want to do, we just want to talk to them. Because even if we can't take them into our facility, we're going to place them. We place 100% of individuals who call us. Whether you have insurance, no insurance, insurance we can take. Wherever you are, you can call us from Alaska and we will find you a place.
Hey, I know relapsing is huge, so I'm curious, do you see a lot of people at your facility after they go through treatment relapse and come right back to you?
Unfortunately, yes. I would not say a large amount of people by any means, but it does happen, yes.
So I guess one of the keys is to get into some type of sober living environment directly after you go through treatment.
So it can be a multitude of different things. So the main levels of care that you'll see is detox, residential, PHP, which is short for partial hospitalization, and IOP, which is intensive outpatient. Okay. And so what we do is we are detox and we are residential. We find aftercare for 100% of our clients. Some clients, that is PHP and IOP, and from there they will transition into sober living. Sometimes it's they have to get back to work. We understand. Some people have lives. They can't just jump and drop everything. We'll get them into what other people have called virtual IOP. They'll do it over the computer, over the phone. We'll set them up with a therapist, with a primary physician, and try to get them, we'll give them all the meetings in the area. We will try to set them up the best we can.
Another medication that is prescribed quite often, and I know prescriptions went up during COVID, was Xanax. Mm-hmm. People have a lot of anxiety today for whatever reason, but Xanax is another one that is prescribed heavily. So do you see a lot of cases where somebody's addicted to Xanax?
We do. Actually, benzos and alcohol is the two substances that if you do not detox properly, you can't die during your detox period, during your withdrawal period.
So Xanax is one of those?
Absolutely. It's wow. It's a main one, yes.
So with Xanax, are people taking, because, you know, it is prescribed in what seem to be low doses, like 0.5 or 1. Are you seeing people take, you know, 5, 6 of those at a time?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and two, and these, the thing is that these Xanaxes now, they're also pressed. So they, meaning they also come with fentanyl, right?
So fake Xanaxes out there as well?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's got to be a huge problem, because when somebody buys illegal drugs on the street, which normally these are medications that require a prescription, but when they buy them on the street, they're often getting, it sounds like, more times than not, something that's made with fentanyl.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people are still learning. I spoke with an older lady, I think it was Friday. She called me, and she had been prescribed Xanax for, she told me, upwards of 20 years. Her doctor had retired, and whenever she went back to her next visit, they said, hey, you're going to get off this today. I'm not prescribing you anymore. And they gave her no filler meds. They didn't dose her down. And, you know, we had to find her help. Even though she was taking it correctly, we still had to find her appropriate detox help, because she could not just be in her home withdrawing by herself. She could die.
You know, it's crazy to think a medication that is prescribed so often is a medication that you could die from if you don't properly detox from.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's kind of the whole thing of addiction, right? It's finding, you know, there's many individuals out there that take pain medicine, anxiety medicine, they drink normally, right? Us as addicts, we don't do that. We can't. We do everything in excess.
So going back to the opioids, is that a medication that also you could die from when you withdraw? I guess it depends if you're taking fentanyl or does it?
So from a medical standpoint, no. It will be very bad. It is painful. It is very tough. But from a medical standpoint, no. Only benzodiazepines and alcohol is one you can die from.
And alcohol, you know, that's one that's so readily available. I mean, you walk into any gas station, any grocery store, it's there. That's got to be a tough addiction.
It is. And, you know, I personally was not a drinker. So when I got to treatment, I didn't really have that perspective. And I was in treatment with individuals who were there for alcohol. And I finally got to see from their perspective, it's everywhere you go. When they go into Walmart, they see it. When they go into Kroger, they see it. You know, if they go into the Dollar General, no matter where they go, it is there. So, yeah, it's very tough. It's very tough.
Well, we got to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. And by the way, you can text us any questions you may have to 615-893-1450. Feel free to text us. On the air with us today, we have Chief Operating Officer Gage Myers with Brooks Healing Center in Normandy, Tennessee. Again, we're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. When I buy a guitar, I have to put my hands on the guitar neck. You can do that here. You can try your instrument before you ever put any money on it at all. And still, cheaper than what you could get online most of the time, at least master prices at worst. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Big benefits at Adams Place.
We have a driver who's here from 8 to 4. He will take you anywhere you need to go.
That's Charlotte Gardner.
It's really a big plus getting around when you do not drive.
Move to Adams Place and leave the driving to us.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
On Memorial.
Across from Walmart.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there. And so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
In studio with us today, and we've been talking about drugs, drug addiction, alcohol addiction. And again, Gage is with the Brooks Healing Center in Normandy, Tennessee. Right now, if somebody were to say, you know, I've got this addiction, whatever it is, what is the first thing you tell them?
Well, number one is we understand, right? That's the biggest asset that we have, is that upwards of 80 to 85% of our staff have all went through this exact walk of life and are still active members of recovery. So that's the first thing. We just want to let them know we identify with you and we understand what you're going through.
Again, what is the number one thing that people are addicted to that come into your place?
I would say fentanyl. Yeah, fentanyl and alcohol. Those are the top two for sure.
And then going back to alcohol, I know you were saying you were with people who, they even highlighted how alcohol is literally everywhere. They're surrounded by it. What kind of tools do you give them in order to say, all right, now you can go into this grocery store and it won't bother you as much? You need to think this thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, you know, being an alcoholic or an addict, it's not the substance, right? If we wanted to just get somebody clean and sober, we could tie them up and throw them into a closet,
yeah,
right? But we want them to go out into the world and be productive members of society. So it's not the substance. We want to help them understand why they do it. We want to help them understand what is it that makes them feel the need to do that, right? That way, when they walk into that grocery store and they see that, they don't immediately go, I need to go grab that. It's because they've been working, and internally they go, I don't need that. And I can respect others that do use that even more.
When you look at traumatic events and the traumatic events that led somebody to alcohol or drug addiction, is there a common theme you're seeing over and over again? You know, maybe what is that trauma that sparked this?
Yeah, it's more times than not, it's childhood trauma.
Isn't it wild how something from your childhood can develop into an addiction 20 years later?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it kind of sets a precedent, because again, the anonymous room that I'm in, it says we were addicts long before we ever took the first substance, right? So our addict behaviors develop long before we ever found out what a drug or drink was. For me, early on, it was escapism. You know, my parents would fight a lot. They didn't get along. We were heavily poor. And as a means to get away from that, I would go outside and shoot ball. And I would spend 8, 9, 10, 11 hours on the weekends doing it. Every day after school, I would do it. And while I enjoyed the sport, I get older and I realize it's not so much that I just enjoyed it, but I was escaping what was around me. I didn't have to be inside where all of the issues were.
So this escape from whatever it is, traumatic event you're going through, this escape that you develop, I mean, that becomes more than just a habit, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Quickly. Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And like I said, that same 7 and 8 year old kid who used to go do that to escape later would use drugs to escape from the issues that he was dealing with at the time.
And when you start using drugs, are you closing yourself in, you know, at your apartment, at your house, and just not coming out to daylight? What are people doing?
Yeah, so for me, that's what it was. It started out, I had friends, you know, my friends would get it for me, and it was a fun thing, right? And then eventually you no longer want to be with people while you do it, and then it becomes a daily habit. So now everywhere you go, it's with you. And then eventually, you know, once I got into the heavier drugs like fentanyl, well, I didn't have other friends that were doing that. So now, not only can I not do it with people, I can't allow other people to see me do it, which isolates me even more. And before I know it, it's just me around.
Now, one of the interesting things that you said earlier, those who were around you, they already knew that you had an addiction before you came out and said, hey, I've got this problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
What did they tell you?
Well, so at first they told me nothing. Right. And that's a common case.
I guess they don't know what to say in the beginning.
They don't know what to say. And also at the time, you know, for me specifically, being a, what I guess you would call like a successful kid, right? Good grades, the sports, went to college, always held a job, you know, those type of things. I think they all just kind of thought, well, if he's doing it, but he's still paying his bills and he's still being productive, then it's not really my place to ask. But then it got to a point to where I got arrested multiple times. I didn't have any money. I was stealing things. I was doing things that I normally wouldn't. And then it became more apparent, because now they don't know how to speak with me about it. So they just kind of stopped coming around. And again, that's not a knock on my family. That's a lot of people. That's the common thing, because they don't know how to address it. So you just leave it alone.
You often hear about people who are injured and the doctor prescribes them some type of pain pill. The next thing they know, it's time to get off that pain pill, and then they're addicted. Is the medical field, are they prescribing these pain pills too much, or what's happening there?
So we obviously know now, looking back, that's where it started, right? The opioid epidemic way back in the early 2000s. We know that's where most of this began, because you could pill hop. You could go from one doctor to another, to another, to another. They've cracked down on it pretty well. I just think that the results have slowly trickled down. And now those individuals, they're still suffering with the same consequences, and the people coming up into it, they're being brought into the easy access of fentanyl.
Are you seeing younger and younger people who are addicted, or is it just the opposite? There's older folks who are addicted.
Everybody. We've had 18, very fresh 18-year-olds come into our facility. We've had 75-year-olds come into our facility. We've had doctors. We've had lawyers. We've had teachers. We've had homeless individuals. We've had firefighters, EMTs. It doesn't discriminate.
And somebody who is as old as 70, 75 years, is it harder for them to get off this medication?
It is. And a lot of times, especially with the prescribed, if they're legally prescribed it, they have a hard time seeing that it's the issue. They do have that. But a lot of times they also do. They're willing. Most of the time we don't get people into our facility who just absolutely think there is zero problem.
How many times have you set in on, as an example, a family gets together and they have an intervention with the son, with the daughter? How many times have you set in on those?
Yeah, I've been through a few, actually.
What happens in those cases? Does the one who is the user, who is, I guess, the target of the intervention, do they get mad?
Sometimes, but it can go one of really three ways. They can get mad and become defensive. Number two, they can kind of deflect. Yes, I do have a problem. I completely understand. But you know what? Instead of me going away to treatment and doing all this, let me come live with you. Let me come stay on your couch for a week. Let me do that. You can hold my money. You can do all the things. Just don't make me go here. Or they fully surrender.
And if a parent were to say, okay, yeah, come on over. We'll lock you in the bedroom. We'll lock you in the living room, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
That doesn't work because it does not dive into that trauma that led to this addiction.
Yeah, right. It doesn't work. We had a wonderful young man who was with us one time. Went through the whole treatment. We tried to give them aftercare plans. They called their parents, said, no, I'm fine. Just let me come back home. I'm okay. And it's easy to understand why, because they just look at the separation. They don't look at the deeper root. They say, I've been away from drugs for 30 days. All I have to do is not use, right? Well, we knew all we had to do was not use when we were using. We have to understand why it is we want to use. And so he did. His parents allowed him to come back home. And about 2 months later, we get a call. He'd been arrested and going through some pretty heavy things and had to come back to us.
So what are people being arrested for? Is it theft in order to get more money to buy medicine, buy drugs, or is it something else?
It can be anything. It can absolutely be anything. It can be DUI. It can be theft. It can be petty crime. You know, there isn't really a one size fits all, but that is a common denominator.
And this is happening right here in Rutherford County in Middle Tennessee. And the drugs that are coming into Tennessee, they're coming from other areas. I know the TBI really highlighted Mexico as an example as to, you know, where a lot of these drugs are coming from. But how accessible are these different drugs in Murfreesboro? How accessible are they to just your common person who is for the first time making a switch from something that's legally prescribed to them to this switch of something that's totally illegal?
Yeah, it is. It's very accessible. And like I said, nowadays, you know, it becomes cheaper, and therefore more people have their hands on it, and therefore more people are able to obtain it. So it's very easy. It's very scary. It's very scary to see how accessible that it is.
Now, is a drug dealer, are drug dealers what you see on TV? In other words, are they, you know, armed with guns, ready to shoot you? What are we interacting here with?
Yeah, sometimes, right? And then sometimes the individuals selling the drugs, they're just everyday people. Again, it's one of those one size fits all isn't really applicable. They can be somebody on a street corner. They can also be somebody who holds a very prestigious job. Me personally, I ran with a lot of different individuals of all different kinds, and there's never a one size fits all.
And I guess that drug dealer could be somebody who legally gets this prescription filled and turns around and sell it, which means it could be your next door neighbor.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of time, what would happen where I'm from a lot is the as far as the prescription pills, the older individuals, they would get the prescription, but they're also on Social Security, so they kind of have to make a choice. They can either pay their bills and they can sell their narcotics, or they can take the narcotics that they need. And that's where a lot of it would come from, where, again, where I came from.
So they would take a certain amount of them themselves and then sell the rest of them.
Absolutely.
How much money were they making per pill?
It would be hard to say. Just you would just have to take whatever it is their copay for the prescription was, and then whatever they charged individuals.
So right here in Middle Tennessee, you interact with all these folks who do go through these problems. How many are you interacting with a day?
Oh, numerous. Our call volume is anywhere between 20 to 30 calls just on average a day of individuals, not counting the patients that we have there, not counting individuals that we run across while we're doing other things, you know, and also being a part of the anonymous rooms, you know, it's a daily interaction.
So that should tell those who are listening that at least 30 to 40 people are saying to you, you know, hey, I want to get clean. That's a high number.
It is. And even whenever we go out places, what we found is that we tell anybody, and even if they can't relate, they say, yeah, I have a niece. I have a nephew. My father passed away from this, or my sister passed away from it. You know, even if you are not affected by it directly, it's still within arm's reach.
I'm sure everybody out there listening knows somebody, maybe they don't realize it, but knows somebody who is addicted to something.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
DUIs, that's something that a lot of folks do get, and it's obviously because of alcohol, but it could also be from drugs as well.
Yeah, I received two of them myself, absolutely.
Now, were yours tied to alcohol, or was it tied to pills and like that?
Yes, it was tied to the fentanyl. I received one in here in Rutherford County and one in a different county.
And you said that somebody you went to high school with actually arrested you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was back when I was in my hometown. It was an individual I grew up playing sports with, and I was unconscious in a McDonald's parking lot, and they came up on me about 12 o'clock at night, and I tried to get out of it like I'd done many other times. You know, I only lived about a mile away, and they just said, no, I can't do that. And I was upset, and I was disappointed, and I was ashamed, but he saved my life.
As we close this morning, if somebody wants, you know, to further that idea of getting clean, they want to talk to somebody at your center, what's the phone number to call, or should they go to a website?
Yeah, the first thing I would do, I would look at our website. It is www.brookshealingcenter.com. That way you can actually see, we have pictures, we have our staff, we have a lot of description on what our facility actually is. There's a number on there you can call. And for anybody listening, I want everybody to know that you're not alone. You haven't people like me out here are trying to find you. I want to help. You can call my personal number at any time at 931-304-1999. It is on me 24/7, and I will be there to help you.
Sounds good. Again, with us today, Gage Myers with Brooks Healing Center in Normandy, Tennessee. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.